Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. Today I'll be doing a presentation on the frequency of truth and some additional related infographics relating to a dualistic conceptual framework and how we can apply dualities and understand them more comprehensively. This is, a continuation from Consciousness and Causality Part 1 and 2, dealing with truth, so that we can better understand ourselves and the dualities that exist in existence. This is a review of previous work that I've already done, plus some new infographics. So those who have gone through the frequency of perceptions and truth infographics that I made last year, well, this will be a review of that and some additional information tying it into the importance of truth in our attempts to understand ourselves and reality that we live in. The first four infographics will be the same infographics that I've previously had, that I have redone in a widescreen 1080p format in the new colorized version of these images. The first image is continuum spectrum scalar degrees for perceiving, conceiving, understanding, and navigating reality, a dualistic conceptual framework. So after I explain the first four images, if you don't understand, please go look at the previous presentation that's about an hour and a half or an hour and 40 minutes long, something like that, that I did last year that goes into an article that I had written on learned helplessness that has to do with degrees of relativity and learned helplessness. And after that, there was another article that I had written to explain aspects of the dualistic conceptual framework. And then I did more infographics, and I explained how I went from Mark Pascio's work to deriving my understanding of this. So that's a more in-depth analysis, so I'm just going to introduce it here again. So this first infographic, on the left side and the right side, so you have the left hand and the right hand. These are symbolic of good and evil. So on the right side, you have X, which is what is. And then you have on the left side, not X. So you have something, and then you have less of something, which is why on the graph it has more of X and less of X. More of X towards the blue, less of X towards the red end of the spectrum. Because again, I'm using the frequency of light spectrum of what we can see as humans with the technology of our eyes. We see above the infrared and below the ultraviolet, and in the middle is green. So that's what I have here, is red, green, blue, and you'll see that in the next infographics on the frequency of consciousness and perception and truth. I'm using the same color patterns. So we have a plane of X, which is the scale, containing variability, multiplicity, diversity of reality, things, concepts, actions, whatever you want to place on something that exists in the universe, you can put it on the plane of X, which is the plane of what is. X is what is. So it's the plane of what is, where you have more of X and less of X. So things that are truth, right, good, love, light, hot. And when you have an absence of it, less of that, well, then you have false, wrong, evil, fear, dark, and cold, etc. So when you have a less of something, less of truth, and you have falsity, you have less right, you have wrong, you have less good, you have evil, less love, you have fear, less light, you have dark, less hot, you have cold. The two bottom ones are more in actual things, and light and dark, and hot and cold. The other ones are what we can derive as higher order consciousness beings, we can come to understand truth, right, good. When you have an absence of truth, right, good, you'll have falsity, wrong, and evil. But it's not that the falsity, wrong, and evil doesn't exist. It exists as a manifestation of a lack of that polarized, absolute, perfected, ideal aspect, conception of truth, right, good, love, etc. That's the absolute. And when you have a lack of the absolute, you have more, you have a less of it, and then the other things can manifest. But you can't reach either end of the spectrum. It's impossible. They're absolutes. So I've explained this in other infographics related to what you're seeing here in the previous presentation on dualistic conceptual framework and the frequency of perceptions and truth. So again, please go look at that if you want more information. That relates to how good and evil. Some people want to say there is no good and evil. It's all part of a harmonious balancing and all this bullshit. Well, it is bullshit because they don't understand how dualities work, and I go into that more into that other presentation. But just to say that good and evil exist as a comparative framework. That's why you use dualistic conceptual frameworks to understand things more accurately, is because it's all comparison. Truth is compared to false, right to wrong, good to evil. And through that comparison, you can see relative degrees, which is why there's things on the scale here in the yellow circles. One thing in relation to another, the one on the far left is worse than the one on the next to it on the right, but that one who's second on the left, well, it's better, it has more of X than the one on the left, but it has less of X than the one on the right. So everything on the right side has more and more aspects of goodness, of truth, of right, of good. So you go to the right side, good, you go to the left side, more evil. More good. You don't reach the absolutes because you can't. So a lot of people try to deny that good and evil are even criteria to judge and evaluate life with, because firstly they believe that incorrectly that they're harmonious and they're supposed to stay together and it's all part of understanding life, and you can't have evil without good. No, that's not true. It's our ability to discern them is why there's a difference. You can have simply good, it would just be a state of pure innocence. And I've explained this in The Tree of Knowledge of Good and Evil and a series I did on good and evil and falsity and the negative. So you can go to evolveconsciousness.org, and where it says main work, there's a drop-down menu that comes up, and in one of them is good and evil. There's also natural moral law. There's also the trivium method. So I put some central parts of my work there. But if you go into good and evil, then you can learn more about how good does not require evil, but that we do need, our responsibility is to know the knowledge of good and evil in order to steel ourselves and make ourselves capable of combating the evil. Many people seem to get confused with an understanding of things within both polarized opposites, both infinites, both pures, such as thinking that there's a pure evil and a pure good, an absolute evil and an absolute good. So then they say, oh, well, good and bad, you can't have good and bad because you can't reach good and bad. That's because they have the myopic perceptions where they actually think the absolutes can be achieved. Some people don't like to judge, and they don't like to discern reality, and they don't like to discern the right from wrong, so then they'll say that judging is wrong, and that you can't judge, so they're going to negate even the ability to judge, evaluate, differentiate, distinguish, discern, compare, and relate aspects of reality, because they don't want to face good and evil, they don't want to face right and wrong, they don't want to face the good and evil within them, the right and wrong within them, because they don't want to do the self-transformative work, so they just dismiss accurately understanding truth and falsity, good and evil, in terms of, oh, well, those are absolutes anyways, so you can't reach them. You got it. The good and evil spectrum is negated because, oh, well, you can't reach the polar opposites. That's right, you can't. But that doesn't mean the things in reality don't have aspects of it being manifested. It's not like you can't learn about it, because you can. So anyways, go look into the previous infographic presentation last year, and also that work on good and evil, and you'll have a more proper understanding of how good and evil works. It's very objective. Anyone can understand it. I've taken the time to go through, analyze reality and express it in ways for other people to understand, but anyone can come to this understanding. I hold no special powers of any knowledge. All it is understanding how we work, how we function as a consciousness unit, what the abilities and capabilities of consciousness are, how powerful it is, and then you can begin to understand the power of symbolism, the power of influence of symbolism, of what the words others speak, of what we read, how it influences us in our conceptions, in what we believe in, and then you can understand also the past history of humanity and how easily we've been manipulated by concepts and beliefs, and how we're still very easily manipulated by concepts and beliefs. We are the ones that have the power, and we're externalizing all our power into beliefs and extra bodily entities and other anthropomorphized entities outside of us and these powers outside of us. And it's all a big delusion that we've been... It's a self-cast spell we've put on ourselves. And it's fascinating once you understand the power we have as a higher order consciousness being and the double-edged sword of the imagination factory and abstraction engine that we have within consciousness to fool ourselves into believing in bullshit. It's very powerful. And we develop attachments to these beliefs because of how good they make us feel. And it's just a big, big joke. So at the bottom of the infographic here, everything is not the same. Various degrees of closeness and separateness, similarity and difference between properties and characteristics allow discernment, distinction, correspondence, correlation, comparison, association, identification, assessment, analysis, judgment, evaluation, etc. With tools to discern one thing from the other, we can make sense of reality. The similarities and differences between the various aspects of reality, higher quality input, and development of effective tools for processing will result in higher quality output. That's pretty much what I have to say about that. And you can also associate properties and characteristics that we're going to associate separateness and closeness, similarity and differentness. This is, if you understand metaphysics and substances and attributes, well, those are all properties of things, qualities of things. So when you analyze the properties and qualities of one thing to another, you can see closeness and separateness, you can see similarity and difference between things, and then you can place it on a scale of something in particular. So if you want to do a scale of falsity and truth, you can place things that people have said or that exist, ways of living that we live in that are in falsity or in truth, are in wrong or in right or in evil or in good, etc. So everything that we do, everything that exists can be placed within some form of conceptual framework of some kind. It's not like everything can be placed into one particular conceptual framework. Not everything can go into good and evil. Like some things just don't fit in. Oh, maybe they do. Maybe they're all the way to one end, like a rock. Can a rock do evil? Well, no. So I guess it would be on the side of truth, right, good. But then everything would just be on the right side of truth, right, good whenever it's it doesn't express anything. So that's why I'm saying, you know, only certain things are applicable. So in good and evil, a spectrum, well, you would apply causal agents that are capable of creating harm, which would be animals. So those things can be placed within good and evil. You can't necessarily place everything within good and evil if it can't even express one form or the other. If it's just good by nature and it can't even express any deviation from that, like a rock, well, then it wouldn't be placed within the spectrum of good and evil. All right. So the next image. This one is transitioning to the next visual way to look at this. So if you want a more of a proper transition of all the phases and how all of this relates to the frequency of truth, which is coming up again. Look at the previous presentation I did, and it has like seven images of a visual explanation from how we get from one to the other. So in the image one, you had some in the red and the yellow and the green and the blue. So we have the same thing here, is you have certain aspects, if you look at the bottom of the plane of truth, containing variability, multiplicity, diversity of reality, things, concepts, and actions. Well, that's those yellow circles. But even within those yellow circles, since we're looking at truth, love, and good, we can look at it as a frequency, which we'll be getting at in the next infographic. So the frequency in red is lower, the frequency in yellow is higher, green is higher, and blue is the highest. So that's just putting it over, and then in that frequency, when it comes along, well, then there's going to be a new point of contact, and all the yellow points are the contact alignment embodiment of an aspect of truth. So when you're in red, and you still have some truth, but you have less of it. There's less truth, love, and good, because you're at a lower frequency of vibration, so you're going to be contacting truth, love, and good less frequently. So you'll have only three aspects. The yellow has five, the green has seven, the blue has 12 or whatever. I didn't count them, I'm just saying. So you have a limited perception of reality, is limited access to truth, is limited unity and embodiment of truth, and that's limited consciousness. That's on the red side. Now if you go to the blue side, where you have more contact with truth, love, and good, that's a higher frequency of contact or alignment of perceptions with quality truth, what is, and a care to embody and become those values, what is right, good, true, moral, etc. That results in greater embodiment of truth and a higher frequency of consciousness. So the less contact you have with truth, love, good, well, that's how you're going to be in the red. You're going to have a low frequency of consciousness. You're not going to have an evolved consciousness. The more you know about reality, the more access you have to truth, love, and good, the more aspects of truth that you've grasped and attained an understanding of, well, then your frequency of perceptions of reality and of truth increase. So your perceptions and truth harmonize more because your frequency of perception and consciousness in blue is coming into contact with more of truth in yellow. So they're harmonizing. Eventually, your frequency would go up so much that you'd have yellow points of contact everywhere, and then it would just look like a yellow line. So I guess that's that. The next infographic is the truth and frequency of perceptions. So from the previous one, if you look at it as the plane of X, and then we had objects, and then we had the frequency cutting through the plane with the contact points in yellow. Now we're going to shift that 90 degrees counterclockwise. Yeah, 90 degrees counterclockwise on the X axis, and then if you look at depth, if you want to call it the Z axis or the Y axis, but depth, if you were to turn the plane of truth 90 degrees forward in the depth axis, well, that's what we look at here in infographic 3, where that you're only seeing the dark side of the blue, the ultraviolet, the highest frequency, as opposed to the lower deep red. So you're looking at them all. So if you were to look at a 3D view, which is what infographic 4 is, if you want to look at it, that's a tilted view of the plane with all three frequencies together. So again, if you want a more an explanation to see how all these infographics tie together in a dualistic conceptual framework and how they represent our frequency of understanding reality, please go check that previous presentation. So we have a higher infographic 3. We have the blue, the green, and the red. And again, you can see less frequency of contact from red, more in green, and then more in blue. And the The indigo bar, well, that's the plane of X that was going from red to blue. So now you look at it from top to bottom, red to blue. But it's in its own, each thing is in its own representation of that plane. And the next infographic 4, well, that's when you merge the three frequencies all into one plane. You can look at it in a 3D view this way. So for now, it's not in a complete 3D plane view. It's from a side view. So this is the side view of the frequency. So the things I've already read, that was already contained in the previous infographic. Same words, same thing. So I'm not going to reread it. The top and the bottom, same thing. Just a different way of looking at it. This is based on Mark Passio's infographic. He had a basic one with just the three lines and the midline to connect with. So I developed upon that, made it 3D, colorful, more pretty. And in infographic number 4, I made it into the 3D view of the plane, which explains how they all merge together into one plane of X, of what is. And now you can look at image 1 and image 2 and 3, and then to get to the 4, all the circles in gray, white, all the contact points when the frequency makes contact with the plane of X with an aspect of what is, well, that would be those are the yellow circles. So instead of looking at it from left to right, from red to blue, well, now the red is at the top and the blue is at the bottom. In the image, you could switch it around and put the red at the bottom, blue at the top, whatever. I put the blue forward because it was the higher frequency to look at closest to us. So that's why I put it here. So the little rings are the contact points that were in yellow previously. And the plane of truth is this whole plane existing in reality. And then there's the frequencies of our consciousness and our perceptions aligning with what exists in reality, and that determines the frequency of oscillation we have with reality and the degree of alignment we have with reality. So you can see blue, they're pretty close together, and they have more contact points. Red, more far apart, less contact points. And again, the text is the same thing as the number 3 and number 2 infographics. Same words, same everything. Just visually represented a different way. So now we're getting into the new infographics that I have done that have not been presented before, but deal with truth and understanding it. So infographic number 5 deals with the dualistic conceptual framework, but this time I'm getting more into aspects of looking at it in terms of relative and absolute, because in infographic number 1, you can see how they are relative to each other. The variability, multiplicity, and diversity, nothing is the same. Everything has identity. Nothing is occupying the same space at the same time in our universe. If I move a cup from my desk and I put another cup in the same place, well, it's not the same thing, although they are occupying the same space, whereas one occupied the same space before, but they can't occupy it at the same time. So I can interchange between two things occupying the same space, but they can't occupy it at the same time, and they're not the same things. So this is how we can place things in reality. And between those yellow dots, so we're looking at infographic 1, each polarity, X and not X, is an absolute, a pure, an infinite. So you have pure, absolute, infinite good, pure, absolute, infinite evil, for example. Now those are the absolute ends of the polarity that nothing can reach. Within those polarities, that's where you have the relative, is everything's relative to each other. So the first thing on the left is relatively worse, has less of X, has more wrong, more evil, more falsity, whatever, than the other one closest to it on the right. But that second one has more truth and more right, more good than the one previous to it on the left, but it has less truth, less right, and less good, and more false, more wrong, and more evil than the next one to the right, or the furthest one to the right. So that's how they're all relative. And that's what I'm trying to explain, is more how to use the dualistic conceptual framework for things such as good and evil, or truth and falsity, right and wrong, and how to understand other things in reality with respect to those absolutes, since the things in reality are all relative to each other. So the law of relativity is a law. People want to say, oh, well, everything's relative. This is where people, again, get into whitewashing, wholesale generalization of concepts that are not applicable wholesale. You can't apply it as a generality, where everything's relative. Because then you get into moral relativism, where people apply that blindly to morality, and they say, oh, well, it's all relative anyways. No, the aspect that is relative for moral relativism is that one thing compared to another in between those two polarities, not the polarities themselves, because they're not actual things in existence. Those things are only expressed through the things in existence, which have varying degrees of those polarities. So the thing in existence, an action, stabbing someone in the leg versus shooting them in the head or something, whatever, there's varying degrees of harm and wrong within those polarities. So the relativity is one wrong to another. But both wrongs are absolutely wrong. So they're both within the absolutes of understanding that they're wrong, but within each other, they are relative. Because one's more wrong than the other. So it doesn't mean everything's relative. Yes, everything is relative, but that does not justify moral relativism, whereby one thing that's more wrong or less wrong than the other, well, oh, doesn't matter, there's no absolutes for morality, it's all relative. No, it's relative in terms of each other, and which one's more wrong or more right. But there is an objective absolute of whether something is right or wrong. So that's where people get lost and confused. They have an understanding of something, and then they apply it universally, but it hasn't been deduced and verified if it actually applies universally. They're just simply engaging in an inventive, imaginated, inductive invocation of an idea, and they're applying it through all of reality. So then everything's relative. No, the law of relativity is absolutely true. Everything is relative. They're all in specific positions on a scale. So they're all relative to each other. But then people forget about the absolutes, the two ends of the spectrum. Well, is it closer to one or the other? So yeah, it's relative to one side or the other as well, but there still are absolutes. Is it wrong or is it right? That can be known objectively. So you can't just take conceptions and blindly apply them everywhere. They're only applicable where they are applicable. And, you know, with the other beliefs and concepts we derive, sometimes they're not applicable anywhere because they only come out of an inventive imagination factory of consciousness trying to provide answers for questions that have us with the unknown, the fear of the unknown, the abysmal darkness of not knowing something, wanting an answer, the doubt, insecurity, discomfort, and trying to alleviate that with some feel-good belief and conception, which there are so many of and have been propagated for thousands of years, and we need to get past this bullshit in order to evolve consciousness truly and focus on things that matter in life. Morality, which is real spirituality. Any other definition of spirituality has very little concern for me. I've talked about this in my work before. And if you want to understand more on consciousness and the power, you can check out the previous two presentations on consciousness and causality, part 1 and 2, as well as symbols, reality, knowledge, belief, and attachment, and grounding in reality, and some ones before that, where I'm trying to lay out the power of consciousness and how we fool ourselves by believing in all these beliefs that make us feel good, even though we don't understand how they make us feel good. When you provide an answer to a fear of the unknown, to a fear that has doubt and insecurity, and discomfort associated with not having an answer, well, then you begin to understand the power we have to fool ourselves in order to feel good by accepting answers, and then we remain attached to those answers because of what they provide for us. Even though they have no bearing on our lives here and now, they're not important, we're going to create secondary and tertiary and fifth level and sixth level belief constructs that correspond with that one in order to give it importance, in order to give it even more meaning, and even in order to make it even more valid in our lives right here and now. But it's all speculation and it's all pure fantasy belief. And it's not required, but it makes you feel good. So, I'll get into infographic 5 here. This is just a symbolic imagery to express a similar reference for understanding, which is by using wave and particle symbolism. Do waves and particles actually exist? As science says, maybe, maybe not. But as it's explained as a model for trying to understand reality, I understand what is being expressed by the wave particle symbolism in terms of quantum mechanics, if that actually exists, if it's not just pure invention. But it's man trying to make sense of experimental data. So the wave, things behave like a wave, not that it's actually a wave, but that it behaves like a wave is what they say in the quantum experiments. It behaves like a wave. It's a symbolic reference, a model. And the particle, well, that's the other end, which is when you don't have the wave, well, it behaves like a particle. So we have a level one where things are relative to each other. So you have x and minus x, and these are the absolutes. But in between those absolutes, there's things that are relative for many. You have many things in between on that scale. It's a relative degrees on that scale. Many things are relative in comparison to polarities. Example, evil versus good. There's a relative variability within the spectrum of different actions, different behavior. So, example, many actions are relative to each other and vary in relativity to the absolutes. So A is greater than B, is greater than C, is greater than D, is greater than E, etc., as I was explaining with infographic number one, and the contact points in yellow, and now you can have the thing on the left is worse than the thing on the right, etc. So that's how this is how the relativity between the things in between, the absolutes, work. Now, the level two is an absolute position. So level one was relative to each other. Every notch, I didn't put the circles, but whatever the notches represent, a possible position, like a thermometer, a ruler, anywhere. Anything could fit anywhere in between. So each of those things are relative to each other. Now, level two is an absolute position where you take one thing, and I have an infographic. So if you just want to look at number six, where I say many possible choices in imagination, you can see where you have the frequency of things, choices, and then it collapses down to one particle. All right. So I just want to visualize that. Come back to number five. So if you look at the level one relative to each other, many things, I had originally two arrows before it became too clouded, my infographic, and it was going down to one thing, right? We're taking, out of the millions of things, we're going to look at one thing. So relative for many, now we're going to look at the absolute for one. The one thing, it has an absolute current condition. So as I said, with good and evil in certain actions, one action relative to another might be gooder, more good or more worse, more wrong, more evil, more right, more true, whatever. From one thing to the other in comparison, just as we compare the absolutes to each other, and we compare the things in between the absolutes to each other, we can compare one thing in all those many things to those absolutes. So it has an absolute current condition for that one thing. So those things that were wrong in relative to each other, one thing was more wrong, one thing was less wrong, but what was wrong in one place and was wrong in another and wrong in another and wrong in another, well, those four positions, those four wrongs, are still wrong but in the absolute, they are still wrong. But relative to each other, well, one is more right, one is more wrong, etc. So that's why you have a level one relative to each other, and then you have a level two, an absolute position. And this is how the dualistic conceptual framework can further help us to understand reality. First, with our absolute comparison, good and evil, right and wrong, truth and falsity, and then we place things in between, so then they have a relative position to each other. They have a comparative relative position to each other, just as x and minus x has a comparative relation to each other in order to understand them more properly. You have good and evil playing off each other as a contrast for comparison to understand them in more depth of contrast. Because when you have things that are different, you can see more and more differences. The more and more differences that are shown, you can see how more and more different they are. If they weren't different, if good was evil, then there wouldn't be any contrast, there wouldn't be any comparison, and it would just be the same thing. So difference is important. Distinction, difference, separation, closeness, it all helps us understand how things are. These are all the properties and characteristics that make things up, and that we can understand them in more detail. So x to minus x, comparative, in order to understand them more deeply. Within those polarities, there's everything in existence. Look at one thing in existence to another. You can compare them and understand them more deeply in relation to each other, and it'll help us understand them in relation to other things in the universe. Now, when we take that one thing, you can understand if it is or is not, in terms of, is it good or is it evil? So, stabbing someone in the leg or shooting them in the head. Well, relative to each other, you know, one is more evil and one is more good. Even though they're both evil, there's just one more to the left is shooting in the head and less to the left and more to the right is stabbing in the leg. But when you look at shooting in the head in an absolute for that one thing, is or is not evil or is not good, is good, no. Is good? No. Is not good? True. Is evil? True. Is not evil? False. So it's absolute. It's either or. That's why people want to negate good and evil comparisons, because, oh, well, it's not an either or. Everything's relative. And they get lost in this whole relativity fantasy land, because they don't understand how to differentiate things properly. Because a lot of people don't want to do that. They don't want to judge, because there's conflict. Oh, you're judging people, and oh my God, then they're going to not want to be friends with you. God forbid that you'd actually have to speak truth in your life and lose friends, maybe once in a while. People that aren't happy with how you do things, with how you say things, with the things that you express, I think that maybe they're in an isolated reality where the things they tell you, you can't tell them to other people. Well, whenever you do things in my reality, your actions become a part of my reality, and whatever is in my reality, I get to use as my reality, as what I see in reality. If I don't see it, someone else does. Well, that's part of their reality. I didn't see it. I didn't experience it. It's still going on in objective reality, but it's not part of my subjective reality that I'm experiencing. So if you want to get to know me and talk about things and things, concepts, and I can use anything that anyone else talks about and talk about them as an experience, as a demonstration of falsity, as a demonstration of evil, as a demonstration of behavior, as a demonstration of attachment, as a demonstration of belief, as a demonstration of grounding in reality, as a demonstration of anything. You don't own your experience when you experience with other people. Then your experience becomes part of their experience. So, we have one thing that's an absolute for that thing being looked at within polarity. Example, one thing has aspects of is or is not in the spectrum. X action is right or wrong itself, regardless of other actions. So, as above, there was A, B, C that are the relative to the absolutes. one is greater than the other, is greater than the other, less than the other, less than the other, etc. But when you're looking at one thing, A or B or C, on their own, well, the right or wrong themselves, regardless of other actions, it doesn't matter. Oh, well, that thing's worse. You want to play a two-cock fallacy and keep pointing to other things and other things and other things just to avoid objectively facing the mirror and coming to terms with something that is in itself right or wrong, which is what many people do when they're faced with immorality, objective immoralities, such as the animal issue. They don't want to face it, so they want to say, oh yeah, well, you don't do this and you don't do that, and you, well, yeah, well, everyone doesn't do this and everyone doesn't do that, and no one's perfect. But does that negate the objective immorality that you can understand about your current behavior, your current actions? No, but that's why people love to use two-cock fallacies, because it's just pointing the finger everywhere else except for at themselves, because they don't want to look at themselves. People have a hard time looking at their behavior and their actions honestly. It's all about scapegoating. They don't want to look at themselves. As long as they can point to someone else, somewhere else, doing something else, well, then they don't have to face themselves in the mirror. They don't have to change. They don't have to do anything. They don't have to improve. And they can just keep perpetuating the same degenerate bullshit over and over, ad infinitum into the future. Because unless everyone else changes, well, I'm not going to change. That's how some ignorant people think. They don't understand the power of the individual, and the only way things change in the collective is for each of us to change each individually. And until that happens, nothing's going to change collectively. So everyone who wants to point fingers at other people and not work on themselves, all they are ensuring is that things will remain in their current condition and things will never change. It all starts from us, from within, and the great power we have in consciousness. Now, we are, look at my previous presentations to understand this, but we are the imaginative force, we are the creative force, we are the generative force from our consciousness to generate our actions into reality, to create and modify the world we live in, and specifically the human world we create and live in. That is only there as a result of humans creating it. It wouldn't be there if we were all gone from existence. All this world we live in, it's all artificial. It's all artificial, made from our arms. Artificial arms. That's where the power is, externally, but the source of that power, in the primacy, to affect the primacy of existence, is the power of consciousness, and that's the imaginal realm. We are the God realm, the generator realm, the creative realm, imagination, where we take ideas and ideals of those infinite concepts, those pure, infinite, absolute ideals, and then we can try to manifest them in reality. We can try to bring more good from our minds, our consciousness, our God realm, our generator realm, our creator realm, and try to bring those ideals, those absolutes that we create in our minds ourselves, and try to bring them into reality. Again, we need the dualistic conceptual framework to do this, because we compare one thing to another and we understand over time, oh, well, this action isn't good, even though we've been doing it for 10,000 years, it's not a good thing. It's not right. It's not true. It's not in love. It's in fear. It's in control and domination, etc. So by comparing things and understanding absolutes and the contrast and the comparison, then we can understand where we are and where we need to go based on the ideals that we envision in our minds that can allow us to understand how things are and how they're not right and where we need to go. And that's my previous work on truth level 1, what is, and truth level 2, what ought to be. And that's the actual versus the ideal. The actual and the real versus the potential. And the potential and the ideal all comes from us. It all comes from the supreme power of our consciousness. And then we can affect the primacy of existence. But all of our understanding and the power of consciousness comes from the base of the primacy of existence. And then we can derive the power from the causal realm of our consciousness to affect the actions that we take in the primacy of existence in order to alter and modify existence in whatever way we choose in our artificial creations. And we can do that towards the spectrum of good, or we can do it towards the spectrum of evil, towards the spectrum of right or wrong, truth or falsity. And that's the goal of higher order consciousness, is to understand these things in order to act in one way or the other. And that's also the double-edged sword of higher order consciousness, is because of our capacities, our creative, generative God capacities, we can create tremendous amounts of evil, more so than other consciousness beings, other animals, but we can also create more good than those other consciousness beings because of the artificial creative power of our arms and our hands. And that'll relate to the all-important, elusive Egyptian symbol, the Ka, K-A, symbolized by upright, straightforward, right, correct, straight arms, hands, our deeds, our actions. Anyways, that'll be coming in the future. And also, one thing I forgot to mention in other presentations, the whole concept of man was made in the image of God. It's actually the opposite. Once you understand the source of symbolism, the source of concepts, the power of consciousness, and how we relate things of ourselves and reality through concepts, through deification, anthropomorphizing, personification, and projection, externalizing aspects of ourselves onto other things that we create from imagination, all these gods and deities and things. It's not we are made in the image of God, it's God is made in the image of us. All these gods, Elohim, the gods in the Bible, the Egyptian, Sumerian, Babylonian, take gods anywhere. All of these things come from consciousness of man, which invented them. It's not God. Man was made in the image of God. It's God. It's actually God was made in the image of man. All the gods were made in the image of man. All the goddesses were made in the image of man. This is powerful to understand, but you have to really understand symbolism, how they were created. First came reality, second came knowledge, third came symbols of reality. It's really powerful to understand. It completely makes so much more sense than believing in all these fantasy concepts that people derive and want other people to believe in order to make them feel good about their position in the universe, about themselves, their self-concept, their self-image, sense of self and sense of reality. All my work has been leading up to where what I currently understand, I see it now. All the things I did with infatuation with novelty and infatuation with the new and not looking at the old. We're always looking in for new ideas, and whenever we have a doubt, we need a new idea in order to quash that doubt or an insecurity, the doubt and the discomfort from an unknown, the fear of the unknown, having an answer, a deep answer that we fear, such as death, and then we need to fabricate concepts and beliefs and answers in order to alleviate that fear, and it provides us with feel-good attachment, and then we get attached to those beliefs. All this is just coming and making so much more sense to me with all my uncovery into language and the work I did on language and reality and metaphysics and symbolism and understanding the power of our consciousness as an abstraction engine, imagination factory. It's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of positive and there's a lot of negative, and my work on good and evil has allowed me to understand this as well, as the great power we have and the great responsibility we have. It doesn't only apply to good and evil, it applies to all aspects of our thinking in our imaginative capacities to invent ideas. They can lead towards truth, or they can lead towards falsity, they can lead towards good, or they can lead towards evil. Some of them are just pure bullshit fantasy. You can invent anything you want. An idea comes from your mind. You want to make it into an ideal, even though it's not real. You want to make that as an absolute, even though it's only in your mind. And a conceptual framework of, oh, well, over here are the God and the Creator, the prime cause. Oh, well, that's the absolute. So then everything over here, well, that's just relative. There's nothing absolute here. No. This is the absolute. This is reality. The actual is the absolute. It changes. But it's actually here. It's absolutely real. The things that come from your mind, your consciousness, that's not absolutely real. That's relatively imaginative. That's relatively phantasmagorical. Because it's based on the relative understanding you have of the absolute reality before you, the primacy of existence, and then the power of your consciousness. You're going to create relative abstractions, relative imaginations, and relative fantasies from. People have it opposite. This whole so-called two-truth. I have another two-truth which is more realistic, and that's the two witnesses of truth and justice. Those are the two truths. And also the two truths of understanding the knowledge of good and evil. That's two truths. But the truth of, oh, well, the immaterial, spiritual, the God concept, well, that's the absolute reality. And, oh, well, here, we're in the illusion of Maya and the relative reality. Well, I call bullshit, bullshit, bullshit on that, on this thousand-year-old bullshit conception that people have been propagating and getting confused in bullshit belief land. Look at where it's gotten people. Look at where these religious concepts have led people into delusions of understanding reality and placing importance on something somewhere else that doesn't even exist, that comes from pure imagination, fantasy of the mind. And that's going to be the most real absolute reality that's important. And here, well, here that doesn't matter. You see how beliefs and concepts can screw people over for centuries and millennia? Why? Because of how infectious they are. Mind viruses are self-propagating for this reason. Because they're very enticing. Why are they enticing? Again, the fear of the abyss, the unknown, the fear of the darkness, the fear of death. All these fears of not having answers to things. Even lesser fears, not even of death, but of lesser questions. And we create fantasy fabrications. And we just create these conceptions and they're all second, third, fourth level constructs based on the first fear, the fear of death, and all. We create the soul and we create God concepts. I'm not saying that there is no prime cause, whatever. Maybe there is no prime cause. Maybe it's a whole infinite regression loop. I have no clue. But where do you stop? That's why at some point you're going to say, okay, well, I'm going to stop at some point. I'm going to call it the first mover, the prime cause, the immovable mover. Or else, in causality, you don't know if that's the end. But eventually you say, okay, I'm stopping here, because it'll just go on forever. You can't actually find the source cause of everything. That's what the whole conceptualization of, quote, God and the absolute and all this was to answer. That's what the whole point was. It was all about, well, we understand cause and effect as a basis in reality, and then what's the cause of this? What's the cause of this? What's the cause? What's the cause of the universe? What's the cause of the cause and the cause and the cause and the cause? And eventually, you go back far enough, and you have to stop at some point and say, okay, well, there's a prime mover, a prime cause, and that's the infinite, and that's the absolute. But it's all from our minds. This is all from consciousness. It's not an actual thing that can be demonstrated. It's only a thought experiment on going back in causality through a causal relation into a prime mover, an unmovable mover, first cause, and then trying to use that as a derivation point for everything else that came afterwards. But it's all imagination. It's all inventive. It's all in our consciousness. Could it be that way? Yeah, it could be. It could be another way too. It's just a thought experiment. People need to delineate between actual reality, probability, possibility, and just pure, well, you know, believing whatever is before your eyes and accepting things as they appear, which isn't very good. Then you're just going to believe whatever is put before you. So there's believing in things as they appear, there's probability, there's possibility, then there's probability, then there's actuality of things as they actually are. So we need to start really differentiating between those things, which I have done previous work on perception versus reality, reality versus perception, which I have included in this presentation as well as a remade infographic. So at the bottom of this infographic, we have, I'm bringing in the wave and the particle. So a wave to a particle, you collapse many into one, as I'm showing in the next infographic on choices, which work the same way. We have the wave and the measure, the ruler, the scale, the spectrum, the degrees. You have a bunch of things. So you take one thing, so you collapse all those things into one thing you're going to look at. So that's how infographic number 6 works. We have many possible choices in imagination. So we collapse wave potential of choices into an actual particular choice. See the potential from our mind, the ideal, the potential from our mind. We collapse it into an actual choice we make, and then we act on that choice. You can't act on the 10 or the 100 choices you have in your mind. You can only do one thing. Out of all the possibilities for that choice, moving on into the future, you can only do the one. So one choice is made among many. Again, we have the wave to particle, collapse the many into one. Just symbolism. I'm not saying the potential ideas, they operate as waves in our mind, and then when we act upon them, it's a particle. That's just a way of looking at it. Because the things in our mind don't actually exist, so they're immaterial, they're spiritual, they're unseen. Okay, so that's why the spiritual, the immaterial, the unseen, oh, well, that's God. That's right, it is God. God, our consciousness, the creator consciousness, the generator consciousness, which is what we are, all as consciousness beings. So we got the wave potential, the infinite potential in our minds. The infinite comes from consciousness, and we take out of all that infinite, we actualize one. So from a wave particle of probability, we're going to collapse that wave, and we're going to make it into a particle, because it's going to be manifested into actual reality as a choice, as opposed to a potential wave that only exists in consciousness. So that's the feedback again, my previous presentations on consciousness and causality, part 1 and 2 goes more into this and other work as well. The feedback between how we generate into reality and then what's generated comes back to affect us, which we then are affected by to generate more into reality, and the reality that's generated by us and other people comes back to affect us, and it's all the circle of life. It's all infinite. This is how cause and effect works. This is how we affect in reality. This is the power we have to affect reality. So this is how choices work in our imagination, the possible to the actual. So we'll go to infographic number 7. So this is one I had made many, many months ago. I've been just waiting for some place to present it. So this one, since I was doing a revamp on truth, I've put it here. So this is about web of perception, truth, and moral awareness. Positive and negative perception of reality as a web network stored in self and consciousness. So this relates to how much can you see of reality as it actually is, and how much can that actual perception to realize the real lies with real eyes. The realization of reality as it is, and how much that can empower you to do something and motivate you to do something. Whereas if you don't see things as they are, then you can't change them into what they should be because you're not even aware of what they currently are. And this is the big problem with the infatuation with the new and the novel and the ignorance of the old. People don't want to look at what currently is. They just want to focus on creating good. And that ties into another little post I made on infatuation with the positive and being good, because people only want to focus on the positive, and they develop a positivity mask and an optimism bias, and they don't see the negative, and they think that, oh, well, now I'm just creating good. But no, you're not creating good. You're just creating evil out of ignorance of what is evil, thinking that that evil is good, and you're just going to perpetuate that evil as good, which is the greatest deception that evil has in order to perpetuate itself is veiling itself under the mask and the illusion of good, which is why people need to really become aware of the knowledge of good and evil in order for us to move forward and progress and stop evil. As long as you are ignorant of evil and falsity and wrong, you will most likely be engaging in some perpetuation of those processes. Only by being aware of what is evil, wrong, and false can you actually empower yourself to remove yourself from creating those aspects of reality into existence. It's not going to happen on its own. You need to stop engaging in it. If you're not going to be aware of the evil, the wrong, and the falsity, then there is no possible way for you to stop engaging in it, because you will be under the hypnosis, the obfuscation, and the veil of the evil as good, the falsity as truth, the wrong as right. So, who is more motivated to do something? Those who are aware of the problem's existence, or those unaware of the problem's even existing, or the need to do something about it? When, quote, all is good, you don't see anything that needs to change. You're oblivious. You're ignorant. Oh, everything's good. I don't need to change anything in reality, certainly not myself, that will reflect changes in reality. No, no, no. Everything's good. Put your smile on. Put your rosy-colored glasses on. Everything's good. Keep that positivity mask on. Don't see anything as it is. Only look at the positive, right? This is what's keeping us in a hole. Infatuation with the positive and the good and the new and the novel. And don't look at the negative and the evil and the old and the current. This is a deep psychological aspect of us and seeking new things, new experiences, novelty. It's part of, a deep part of consciousness as we are as beings. It's very deep. But it's screwing us over. Because we're looking for new things, new experience, new titillation, new stimulus. It's always new stimulus. And this ties into our false multitasking. Because we can't multitask. We're just breaking up segments of time into smaller and smaller segments of time in order to do things in shorter segments of time themselves, but within a greater collection of those segments of time, six things together in 1 hour. Well, it looks like we're multitasking, but you're just doing six things in six smaller chunks of time within a greater framework of time, as opposed to doing one thing for an hour, and then another thing for an hour, six things an hour each. You're going to do six things for 10 minutes within each hour. And every hour you're going to do it for 10 minutes. Do you think that's productive? Not really, but it ties into our psychological infatuation with the stimulus, with the new things, and our avoidance of the old, and our only want to look at things as being good, and look at ourselves as being good, and our lives as being good, and the way we live as being good, and our way of life and reality as being good, because we don't want to face things as being bad, and because then that actually makes us feel bad about ourselves. But it's actually empowering in the end to actually realize how you're failing yourself, how you're lying to yourself. But people don't understand that empowerment of knowledge and truth and good and right. So they fear knowing the evil, the false, and the wrong in order to bring themselves into more right, because they don't understand how self-transformation and self-renewal works, and it's a process that goes on forever in our lives, and that's how we can eventually create a heaven on earth rather than the hell that we've been progressing.